What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the King's Court Podcast, presented to you by RateCrushers.com. Guys, it's been about 12 days since the last show. I appreciate your guys' patience for this. And during that last episode, you know, we went over the entire Kings, 25 games for the Sacramento Kings, going up and down over debating on what the Kings record would be in that time. And in the middle of that, I talked about the person that's going to be the guest on today's show. So without further ado, making his Kings Court debut, the creator of Kings Film Room, the one and only Skylar, can I be honest with you, brother? I am so bad with your last name. How do you pronounce your last name?
Shite.
Skylar Shite, yeah. Kings Film Room. Brother, what is going on? Thank you for making your Kings Court debut, man. Excited to have you on.
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me. How about you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. You know, right off the get, I wanted to ask this to you because, you know, not a lot of people would take the time out of their day, let alone make a whole channel about watching Kings film. What drew you to that? What made you say, this is what I want to do and start bringing this type of content to you guys?
Well, it's really stuff that I would do regardless. Like, even if nobody else watches it or, you know, enjoys it, it's something that I enjoy doing. Because I've always gravitated towards, like, the X's and O's and analysis side of basketball. And so, you know, I've always, and being a Kings fan my whole life, it's stuff that I always like to take a look at. But I knew that there would be people out there that enjoyed as well. So that's why I kind of made the steps to go ahead and create it and give others the opportunity to, you know, take a deeper look at the kind of basketball analysis that I enjoy that may not have been, you know, as available before.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's I think it's so awesome to see how fast your channel has kind of grown and blossomed into what it is. I mean, the fact that, you know, I'm doing shows like this one, I'll also go do Cowbell and be guests on all these other shows. And the great part is they'll come at me with some of your content and the videos that they're watching from you saying, hey, you know, King's Film Room did break down some awesome stuff about, say, for example, Kevin Huerter's defense. And saying that Kevin Huerter's defense is, you know, actually not as bad as you think it is. It's really not that good. And again, like I said, man, I have to applaud you for just the willingness to not just watch Kings film, which is just crazy enough as it is, when there's no games on, but then to also deep dive into all those extra moves. So I just want to applaud you for that, man. That's awesome.
Thank you, man. I mean, it's just stuff I love doing. So, you know, I really enjoy it.
Speaking of Kevin Huerter's defense, I don't think I'd be doing this channel any justice if I didn't tell you my point that all during the last show, there was a full 6-minute debate about why I believe that Kevin Huerter's defense is not good. I said that it's not the worst on the team. I'm not going to say that, but I think overall, Kevin Huerter and this and the roster changes that they made, the additions that they made on this team, yes, they're better offensively, but I think defensively they're still looking to struggle heading into next season, even though they acquired Mike Brown. Looking at these additions, you doing your film breakdowns on guys like Huerter and the rest of them, what are your thoughts on their defense heading into next season?
So the defense will definitely still be the part that is still lacking. You know, I wouldn't expect them to be in the upper half of the league. I think it's possible if all things go like perfectly. But I mean, yeah, Kevin Huerter is not a great defender. And his numbers and all the metrics that rank him, you know, they don't favor him. But that really was due, like in my video, how I covered, it was just an extremely high workload. Like he was forced to cover like team's best point guard, team's best shooting guard, because they didn't want Trae Young out there who just has so many limitations that, you know, he'll get as bad as like Kevin Huerter would get beat up by these guys. Trae would have been like 5 times worse. Yeah. So, you know, in a system where he's not covering as many, you know, like lead ball handlers and shot creators, I think it'd be a lot better for him. But also, you know, the Kings also have a point guard like Trae Young, who's not specifically great on the defensive end. Fox is a little bit better, but it's still marginal. But the difference is that Fox doesn't have the same limitations as Trae, and that there is upside there on the defensive end. So, you know, it's really up to Fox more than a guy like Huerter, in my opinion.
Yeah, I bring up Huerter just because I feel that in my mind, it's pretty clear that it's going to be a Fox Huerter starting backcourt. So I think a lot of people look at that and the debate then comes, well, actually, we think Herter's better as a small forward. And I think Kings fans tend to fall into that mindset of these tweeners being able to play just the bigger role because they need that position to be filled. As a defender, for Red Velvet, do you think he's better as a shooting guard defender or as a small forward defender?
Probably as a three, because I don't think that he's super quick laterally, but he has some strength to him, and he's got size, 6'7". And he's lean, but he is like kind of has some deceptive strength to him. And I've seen him like be able to take bumps from guys like Paul George. And, you know, it's better to guard those guys than quicker ball handlers.
Overall, looking at this team heading into next season, I think it's – and the more I keep looking at this schedule, the remaining teams in the West, how – I'm viewing the Western Conference going to play out. I view this as a season where it's now or never for this Kings team to really start making this playoff push. If there was any chance to really go all in for a playoff berth, it would be this year with the Jazz looking to completely retool their entire roster, the Blazers being a brand new roster. And I think on paper, it's a coin flip between who's better between the Kings and the Blazers. And currently as constructed, I think the Kings have the better roster in on paper. I think it's boom or bust here, but what are your expectations for the Kings as a whole next season? Do you think it's also boom or bust for playoffs next year? Like, now or never, time to go all in? Or are you okay to see a development year under Mike Brown?
I think a development year should still at least be, like, playing. Like, I think 10 seed is the minimum. I wouldn't say it's as boom or bust, because I think that, you know, if you do just, like, miss as a 10 seed, like, a game, say you're the 11 seed, I think that you do have some hope next year, and you know you can make some minor moves and improve the roster. But yet, I mean, it definitely is like you have to show a lot of improvement this year to have any give the fans any sort of hope and expectations going into the future.
Yeah, I mean, look. If the Jazz are out of the playoffs, you're wondering whether or not the Blazers are even going to be in contention. Are the Lakers truly going to get better? I think with the addition of Patrick Beverley and just their overall roster, I don't think LeBron's missing the playoffs 2 years in a row, 3 years in a row, whatever it is, for him to be not viewed as a playoff team at this point. But for play-in-wise, the Kings, in my mind, are in competition with the Blazers, the Grizzlies. I think the Spurs take a step back, so they should be finishing above the Spurs. And I think they can compete with the Pelicans. We still are not 100% sure of what Zion is. That's why I say it's all in, but I agree with you. I mean, I think a development year under Mike Brown is something to be expected, and I continue to bring back the seminar that Mike Brown does about talking about flow offense and the mindset of easy flow, and he says that it takes time for players to learn that mindset of moving up and down the court at a quick speed and making 0.5 reaction. It means you have a half a second to make a reaction move. And I do believe that with Fox and Sabonis, you have the players to do so. But to just know the right moves and know and trust in your personnel, I think that's a big thing that no one talks about, but they'll talk about it with other teams, saying that you can catch the Clippers on an off night because they still haven't played together with Kawhi and Paul George. But the same could be said about De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis only playing in probably 11 games total. So the reason why I say it's all in is because I don't think you're going to see the West being as tight as it will be than this season as a whole, with so many teams looking to restructure. And on top of that, I think there's just so much pressure on De'Aaron Fox to prove that he's worth every bit of it. And I talked about that on the last show as well. What are your thoughts on De'Aaron Fox this year? What are your expectations for De'Aaron Fox this year?
I will say for Fox, this is kind of a boom or bust year. He has to bring back that 25-7, but also be more of a contributor to winning basketball. It's not to say that he's not a contributor to winning basketball, but he needs to like make those strides in the defensive end, be more of a leader, which we saw a lot of glimpses of last year as well. And so I'm excited for that. And I think that he will get back to that 25-7 form we saw in 2020, 2021. Yeah. Maybe not those numbers, but he can have a bigger impact in that. Even that season, you know, that team was still pretty bad. I don't know what the record was, but it was like 31-41. And yeah, so he was really, and there was no Sabonis that year. I would think that Sabonis would really have a positive impact on Fox. So maybe those numbers won't be the same, but I think he can have a much bigger impact. And so I am excited for him because I think that he will make the necessary adjustments and strides.
What are those necessary adjustments and strides you need to see for him next season?
Just be more focused and engaged at all times. We know what kind of player he is, and I think he's going to be in a better system that focuses on, you know, that fast pace, and he's not going to be as so relied on ball. You know, you can go to Sabonis in the post and have him run the offense in the half court, and just have Fox, you know, be the man that leaks out and runs transition offense and then gets engaged in the flow with the offense in the half court, but without that heavy workload. And so that allows him to, you know, just do take more of a emphasis on the defensive end.
Does it concern you or encourage you at the fact that I feel the big storyline between the Tyrese Halliburton, De'Aaron Fox situation and why they traded Tyrese was, you know, they're giving the ball to Tyrese Halliburton. They're putting the ball out of De'Aaron Fox's hands. But you look at the players that they brought in. I think they brought in a Malik Monk because he can handle the basketball, take some of the offensive workload out of the hands of De'Aaron Fox. Kevin Herter, the same thing. He's able to pass a little bit, obviously better as a catch and shooter, still capable of doing that. And then last season, bringing in Sabonis and letting him kind of run up the court looking like DeMontis Simmons. He looked like Ben Simmons out there a few times last season. And it was very encouraging to some out there. Coach Nick, who just recently joined the show from B-Ball Breakdown, saying that he was encouraged to see that Fox let Sabonis run the offense at times. Do you want to see Fox as more of a on-ball facilitator or more of willingness to let other guys make the plays and seeing him become more of a slasher and obviously a better shooter, because that's going to need to happen for him to take the next step?
I'm sure you've seen numbers about the Fox and Sabonis pick and roll. Yeah. Like, it's just ridiculous. Like, in I think like 14, 15 ball screens per game, and they're putting up like top five pairing in the league numbers. And so you obviously, because of that, you want to get as much out of that action as possible. But yeah, I still would like to see, you know, Malik Monk get his fair share in the offense and Kevin Herter and obviously DeMontis Sabonis. So I would say, yeah, I want Fox and Sabonis to be the – you want to get Fox and Sabonis pick and roll or at least somewhat of action like that every play. But you also have the ability to flow into other actions because everyone has the ability to do multiple things. You know, Herter and Monk are both great off the catch, but they can also create for themselves off the pick and roll. You know, they have a good game off the dribble. They can pass a little bit, and Sabonis can just pretty much do everything.
Yeah, and look, man, they're going to get thrown right into the fire to start the season. Like I said on the last show, I went through the first 25 games of the season, thinking those games are key in determining what they're going to do with De'Aaron Fox this upcoming season. Like, I do believe that if Fox starts off as slow as he did last season, and seeing the struggles that he had through after 20 games, if the Kings are not showing progress and steps forward, that there could be changes at that spot. And at the end of it, man, like, personally on paper, I had them finishing 12-13 through the first 25. Like, I really think that that's a true record that they can have. Still a game under 500, but steps of moving forward. What would be a good record for you to still feel comfortable after 25 games?
I think 12-13 is probably like not perfect because obviously you want to do better, but under a new system, new head coach, basically new everything, there's so many new players you're going to have. At least two of the starters are new on the team. Sabonis and Fox have only played 15 games together. A lot of the bench is new guys. So I wouldn't expect them to be too great out of the gate and with a new head coach. So I would say 12-13, you know, that's pretty quality. And when you look at like Boston last year, Boston really struggled for the first half of the season. They took until the second half of the season to take off over Ime Udoka. And so, you know, obviously we're not going to be like that good, but I would say if you can like keep it manageable, you can't have another Fox slow start this season for sure. He has to come out of the gate looking like at least like 95% of what he can be, like what we saw the last 15 games of him last year. So, yeah, I would say 12-13 around there. Keep it, like, within 500.
If you see the Kings start off the season and they're, let's say, 8-17, what do you think the mood in the cloud that hangs over the Kings? Do you start looking at De'Aaron Fox in a different light? Are you open to the idea that maybe it is time to move away from a De'Aaron Fox? Is that the type of pressure that he's heading into this season?
I think that even now, you have to like keep all options open. I don't think anything's off the table. Now you obviously want to ride it out. If it's only 25 games, I think you have to just ride it out at least till the trade deadline just to see, because things can turn around. Teams get streaky. You know, what if somehow they magically went 8 in a row after that and you're sitting at 500 again? So I would say you have to at least wait out. And you don't have any, there's no reason to do anything at the deadline this year. You could just wait until the offseason and see what happens. And see where the team's at. I would say that the best course of action is, no matter what, just ride it out this season.
Skylar Shy, creator and founder of King's Film Room, making his King's Court debut. This show is brought to you by RateCrushers.com. If you guys are looking for insurance, whether that be car, motorcycle, leisure, renter's insurance, these guys over at Rate Crushers have you covered, beating the competitors up to 35%. I continue to bring up De'Aaron Fox here, Skylar, and I think the biggest reason why I do so is because, and I'm privy to that. I do this all the time. When I view the Kings, I think De'Aaron Fox as that franchise centerpiece. De'Aaron Fox is the building block to this team. But I've been going through probably like just leading into the show when I knew I was gonna have you on. Once again, thank you for coming on the show. But going leading up to this moment, I've been debating, like, could we maybe stop saying that? Maybe Sabonis is the guy. Maybe the reason why they traded for a two-time All-Star that's the same age as the player that you draft. Is it just because they drafted De'Aaron Fox that he's the franchise centerpiece? Or is the two-time All-Star at his position walking double-double, probably the most consistent player on the team heading into next season, should be known as the franchise player? What do you think about De'Aaron Fox versus Domantas Sabonis? In your mind, who should carry the tag, the label, as the Kings franchise player heading into next season?
If I were forced to label, then I would say probably Fox. You know, I think that drafting the player does mean something, and that he's been here for a while, and the fans are more accustomed to him. So I think that's a big deal. But all the steps the Kings have made, at least like the over this offseason, during the season, trading Tyrese, I feel like that was all part of, you know, putting that focus as De'Aaron as a franchise player. I don't think that they make that move in order for Tyrese Haliburton, you know, if it was Fox for Sabonis. I think that Fox is their guy, and I think that he probably is their best player when all things go right. You know, we know what Sabonis is. Sabonis is consistent. He's going to get you 20 and 10 every night. But when Fox is on, he's the best player in the team.
Yeah, I mean, I think just because of this is such a guard-driven league that I believe you. Like, I think that De'Aaron Fox, talent-wise, if everything is working right, he's the best player on the team. But I think consistency does have to play into a factor when you're considering the franchise player. Like, for example, I mean, Chris Webber was the team's franchise player, and arguably the best player at the time because he was the most consistent was between Peja and Bibby just because of what they were doing back in their prime. So I think it's coming into that type of debate, but you know who the guy is, and I still say it is De'Aaron Fox. I mean, you can't teach that type of speed. You can't teach that fourth quarter takeover ability and the fact that on any given night the man can still drop 50 on you. But at the same time, you look at a guy in Sabonis and – he hasn't really showed it during EuroLeague, I'll be honest. The three-point shooting has not looked great in EuroLeague. But, I mean, the fact that he's working on it, and I think you're going to see a lot of that three-point shooting from him, I think you have to really look at it and try to figure out who is that guy. And in your opinion, do you think that has to be defined at all? Or do you think that both of them are going to have to rely on each other in terms of being co-franchise tag players like a Kawhi and Paul George, and just knowing that Kawhi or De'Aaron Fox in this situation is just A and Sabonis is B?
Yeah, I'd prefer to just look at him as a duo. I wouldn't want to put that label on either of them because in the end, I would trust either of them with the ball in their hands, with the game on the line. So, I mean, De'Aaron's been here, so I think that's why he gets a nod, to be honest. It's just that he's been here and the fans love him and, you know, we all feel a little bit more attached to him.
Yeah, man, if you guys can't tell, King's Film Room, getting some love in the chat as well, loving your breakdown, man. Like I said, people come on the show, they talk about the breakdown, so shout out once again to you guys in the chat. And if you haven't done so already, please do us a huge favor, hit that thumbs up button. If you're new to the show, please hit that subscribe button. Look, Skylar, I think that we've kind of looked at this team from both their stars and what we're expecting from the team as a whole. But I want to kind of look at some of the other guys that I still don't feel get enough love. And the big one for me, and it's someone that I have high expectations for going into his sophomore season, and that's Davion Mitchell. I think Davion Mitchell is kind of being underlooked here at this time of the offseason because they brought in Malik Monk and Kevin Huerter, and those two guys are the ones fighting for the potential starting spot next to De'Aaron. But Davion Mitchell was also a leading candidate prior to these moves. What are your expectations for a Davion Mitchell next season?
I still think that there is a small outside chance that he gets a start at the two guard. I don't think it's very likely. I would probably give it like 3 to 5%. But what if he takes like a massive jump in the offseason to the point where you just can't leave him on the bench? Like he is legitimately like a 15-point per game player with elite defense. I don't think you can leave that on the bench. I think that you could, but that would be a great player off the bench, like a Marcus Smart plus. But I mean, I love Davion. He just provides so much. I think that he's going to take a big stride offensively. And I mean, we know what he is as a perimeter defender on ball. And that kind of energy is just something that the team needs. And if he takes that step to be a leader as well, I think it will do like huge for the rest of the guards in this roster. You know, I think that it's going to make them all want to play that kind of defense. You know,
Yeah.
if Davion's getting into you at practice, I would say that, you know, you want to get back into him on the other end.
Yeah, I think Mike Brown is going to fall in love with him as soon as they start practicing, being a defensive-minded coach and being able to throw him out there and really test, guys like Fox and Monk and Huerter to just really be better versions of themselves. And I think that's also another reason why he should be an outside chance of becoming a starter, just because he's going to earn the trust of the coaching staff right away with his work ethic, his defensive mindset, and the improvements that we saw just last season. And on the offensive side, the assists, the ability to finish around the rim, that 3-point shooting was actually not looking horrible toward the end of the season. But for me, I think there's like a minutes question mark now between whoever gets the starting role, and let's say I'm assuming it's going to be Monk that comes off the bench with Davion. Who are you okay with giving the most consistent minutes to? Because I don't want to see a rotation where one night you're only seeing this player for like a week of only 12 minutes a game because they want to have extra scoring, and then Davion's only seeing 12 minutes because of his defense. Do you want to see Davion getting consistent, say, 18 to 22 minutes a game, and Monk just being that scorer, getting that 12 to 15 potentially on that any given week? Or do you want to see key rotational minutes for all of these guys, and you're just going to have to pick and choose where those minutes come from?
I think it's tough because there's four guards that I really like on this roster. So Fox is going to be getting 35 a night. That's an obvious one. But Davion has to get 20, 22. I feel like there's just no way that that's your best defender on the team. I don't even think it's close. He's got to be getting 20 minutes a night. And then Monk and Huerter. Huerter has more. He can give you at least 25 because he can play multiple positions with no problem. He can play two. He can play three. Monk, though, is a kind of the odd man out in this situation. If he's only playing backup too, how much minutes is he getting if Huerter's playing well? Not very much. He can play someone, but I mean, you have Fox and Davion, so you don't really need that. And, you know, he's undersized, so you don't want him at the two. So it's really tough to, you know, say for sure what he would be getting. But I think that Fox, his minutes are guaranteed. Davion's is guaranteed. And Huerter's are pretty much guaranteed because of his versatility. So for Malik, you know, it's tough. He would be the odd man out, I feel like.
Let me play devil's advocate here then, right? Because I'm with you. Everything you said is what I believe. But the counter to that is, why would Malik Monk leave the Lakers in a role where he is going to not only get minutes, but is truly needed on that roster to come to the Kings if you don't think he was behind the scenes, behind closed doors, promised minutes? And then what does that do to Davion? And I think that's a big question.
Well, I mean, he did come before Kevin Huerter got traded, and I feel like he just believes in himself. Like he will earn those minutes. He probably sees himself as a starter on this roster. I would imagine that he feels that way, that he should start at least. I don't think that will happen, but you know, I think that obviously his relationship with the Fox did play a factor in him signing here, and I would expect him to be, you know, consistently getting a heavy minutes. But I don't know. I mean, 15 minutes per game is probably the minimum with him, and but it's just hard to see like that max unless he's playing like way above what we expect.
Move to Rashawn Holmes. I think Holmes is another player that no one really talks about. There was a lot of up and down. There was an up and down season for Rashawn Holmes that kind of has gotten a little bit on the bad side of Kings fans because of the question mark of what he's going to bring to the team, where his role is on the team now that the Kings have acquired Sabonis, and knowing that they're going to move forward with Sabonis once that contract extension becomes, you know, talks become official. But I do believe that there is a true role for Holmes on this roster where you're going to see him get 20 to potentially 25 minutes on any given night. I think he can't earn that. And I believe Mike Brown will test the idea of a Holmes Sabonis lineup. I think that's something we're going to see way more of since we didn't see it at all last season. What are your thoughts on Rashawn Holmes heading into this upcoming season?
I feel like Kings fans forget that he wasn't supposed to be a starter. He was starting because Dwayne Dedmon didn't pan out. We had nobody else at that position. And respectively, he did earn his minutes. He earned that starter's role, but he was signed to be a backup big man. He's an energy guy, and he's really perfect for that spot. I think he's probably top 10, top 5 backup center in the league. He just provides, you know, he's a decent defender, decent rebounder, elite scorer inside, obviously the little floater that he has. And just the energy that he brings is contagious. And so for a backup big, I don't know what more you can really want out of a guy. And so I don't know about him playing with Sabonis, you know, a couple minutes per game. But, you know, just because of the spacing, and Holmes used to shoot threes before he got to Sac. In Philadelphia, they had him experimenting a little bit. Sabonis, you know, we've seen, Phoenix a little bit. And Sabonis, you know, like you said, he just struggled in your league. We've seen him working on the shot with a lethal shooter, but I'm not going to, you know, pant on that panning out. So just because of that, I don't think you want to have two non-shooters on the court. But, I mean, you can live with that for like 5 minutes per game because Holmes will give you a little bit of a perimeter defense and kind of a feel for some of the weaknesses that Sabonis has.
Yeah, I just think that there's more teams now that are leaning back to the old ways. Look what the Minnesota Timberwolves did. Going out and getting Rudy Gobert to go next to a Karl-Anthony Towns. Now look, Karl-Anthony Towns was a three-point champion last season. He, I believe, was in top 5 in three-point percentage, so it obviously is a clear difference. But then you go over to the East and you look at Cleveland. Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. There's ways to make it work. I think if there's anybody that has the defensive mindset and schemes that could make a Sabonis Holmes defense make sense, I think it's definitely Mike Brown. Now, offensively, there's the struggles. We're seeing it already in EuroLeague with Jonas Valanciunas and Sabonis now. And again, that shot does not look great. But to get those two on there, I think Holmes is arguably your second or third best defender on this team. And I think he needs to be on the floor. And you say he's a decent defender. I think he's a good defender, especially in terms of the fact that if you put him in a pick and roll against the guard inside the three-point line, he has the lateral quickness to stay up and also recover with his athleticism. He's also pretty good at boxing out. He struggles against guys that have heavier size, but then that's where Sabonis steps in, and that's where he takes that lead role. I 100% agree with you. Holmes is a backup big, but he is a super sub backup big, and people cannot forget that. I mean, he finished as a starter top 5 in field goal percentage, top 5 in blocks. That's something that you're going to want to have on your team. Again, the question marks of, well, if Turner, who's a shooter, and Sabonis didn't work, why on earth would you even try and think about Holmes and Sabonis? But I think you just want to roll with your best players available. And Holmes, clearly to me, at that position, is one of the Kings' best players.
Yeah, I think if you like put an aggressive scheme out there, like, you know, you're blitzing hard and you got high hedging, I think you can make it work because both Sabonis and Holmes, they got some mobility. You know, they're not stiff. Holmes really, you know, he can go out there and, you know, hedge against guards. And if you're trapping, that he'll definitely help. And it's a bonus, you know, he's not a rim protector, but he can move his feet a little bit. So if you put a scheme like that together, I could see it, you know, working in stretches just to throw defenses off, offenses off.
Is Keegan Murray a starter day one?
I think so. I think that he provides just too much on both ends. And there's just nobody else in this roster that I think can even compete with him right now, to be honest, at that spot.
What's more in your mind out of these two lineups is more of a quote-unquote death lineup for you? Fox, Monk, Herder, Barnes, Sabonis. Fox, Herder, Barnes, Murray, Sabonis.
That's a tough one, to be honest. I would say right now, probably the Fox, Monk, Herder, Barnes, and Sabonis. More of a death lineup. But the better lineup for like 20 minutes in a game would be the one with Keegan in it, I feel like.
Yeah, I think regardless of what lineup they put out there, and we'll end the show with just this little bit of just film of when you get to see a little bit of the Ox and the Fox. I think if you're able to put real shooters other than Justin Holiday was a good shooter, but he struggled when he came to Sacramento. I think we could say that about a lot of shooters that head over into Sacramento after being traded. But to get a Mo Harkless out of a corner for a quarter three and getting that to become a Keegan Murray and a Harrison Barnes. But this pick and roll action where Sabonis gets to have the ball, this is going to be the stuff that makes and breaks this Kings team. I'm excited for all of this right here. I'm excited to just see the evolution of this team with their core guys. You know what I mean? And again, I have so much expectation for Davion Mitchell. Look at Dante DiVincenzo. Were you surprised Dante DiVincenzo made that decision, or the Kings made that decision to move on from him?
At the time, I was, yeah. That didn't make sense at the time. But once all the moves got made and we saw who the Kings added, it made a lot more sense, because I would probably rather have Malik Monk, and I would definitely rather have Kevin Herter.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, that's it, guys. That has been the conversation with Kings Film Room. You guys have been asking for him to come on the show. I reached out. I got him. Skyler, thank you so much, man, for coming on the show. I really do appreciate you making your Kings Court debut. This was a lot of fun. Great conversation. Definitely going to have you on during the regular season as well and go over some tape with you. But before I let you go, where can the fans find you online, and what can they be expecting from you for the remainder of the offseason and obviously heading into the next season?
So you can find me at Sac Film Room on Twitter and Kings Film Room on YouTube. And right now I've been working on Mike Brown stuff, but I'll be honest, you know, I've kind of been a little disengaged from basketball the last few weeks. That's why I haven't been active on Twitter recently. You know, for one, I just been busy, you know, school started back up and I'm in college right now. And, you know, it's just baseball season, football season starting up. So I've been watching those. So I just haven't had a lot of time with, you know, Kings Film Room. But, you know, I will get Mike Brown stuff out pretty soon. I've been slowly working on it. You'll see a Mike Brown offense breakdown and a Mike Brown defense breakdown. So I would say that's what will hopefully be ready before preseason.
When you look at Mike Brown's offense, I think him running the Princeton is going to be a key reason why you're going to see a lot more of that Keegan Murray post game that I did not think was going to translate to the next level. Being that Keegan was in the 99th percentile in college, I don't think they're going to want to steer away from that. And I think when you run the Princeton, he is going to be able to get those looks down low, and the Kings are going to utilize that. And I think Mike Brown's going to find ways to get him down there. And I'm excited to see what you do on that Kings Film Room, man. You guys go give him a follow at Sac Film Room on Twitter, Kings Film Room on YouTube. You guys go subscribe over there as well. If you are new to the show and you're tuning in today, do two things for me, man. Hit that thumbs up button so this video continues to go through the algorithm and blow up this show. And if you're here to the channel, man, hit that subscribe button. We got content coming out every single week with guests, film breakdown, and conversations just like this. I want to thank all of you guys who have joined us in the chat today. You guys are all awesome. This show has been brought to you by RateCrushers.com. If you guys are looking for insurance, be sure to go to them, as they are defeating the competition by up to 35%. I've been your host, Vince Miracle. You guys can follow me on all social media platforms of at VM Center. And until next time, Sacramento Kings fans, peace.